welcome to Tuesday night's program here on the Molloy program, on the Molloy Show. All right, let me try it again. Hey, good evening, everybody. It's about 7 past the hour. Welcome to the program tonight. Glad you could make it. My name is Mike Molloy. Somebody reminded me of the... there's so much lying going on right now. Somebody reminded me of the famous Joseph Goebbels, or infamous Joseph Goebbels statement, but there's so much lying. I've never heard a presidential candidate lie the way Romney does. It's starting to get scary. I mean, it's one thing that he's a clown, and we're going to talk about that later on the program tonight. Some of his clown act is some of it's entertaining in a real weird way, but the steady stream of lies that permeates the political atmosphere in this country is scary to me. It's really starting to be scary. It's one thing to have a knockdown, drag out when you're dealing with two points of view diametrically opposed. Okay. But when the airwaves and the political discussions and everything is just, and presidential wannabes are just filling the atmosphere with lies. I've never seen anything like this. And I think it's going to have, it is having, but I think ultimately it's going to have a horrific, horrifically adverse effect on everything in the country. If things aren't screwed up enough already. But Romney and all these Republicans, not a single one of them tells the truth. It's like I said, it's scary. Goebbels said, if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent. For the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Jesus God. And James Baldwin's statement, Baldwin said, people who shut their eyes to reality simply invite their own destruction. And anyone who insists on remaining in a state of innocence long after that innocence is dead turns himself into a monster. Meow. This hour is being sponsored by George Tutarian. Thank you, George. His message, a quote from Senator and presidential candidate Barack Obama. Quote, America deserves a leader who speaks truthfully about the Armenian genocide and responds forcefully to all genocides. I intend to be that president, end quote. President Obama has not uttered the words Armenian genocide. George Tertarian. Thank you, George, for the sponsorship. You're absolutely right. Of course. Or you wouldn't have said it, right? State of Florida responds to Sexual Assault Awareness Month. That's what the month of April is. Sexual Assault Awareness Month. That must make the Catholic priests very nervous. But at Daily Kos, something is pointed out here. The way Florida acknowledges Sexual Assault Awareness Month is Rick Scott, the governor there, vetoes funding for Florida's rape crisis centers. Let me say it again. Rick Scott has vetoed funding for Florida's rape crisis centers. The Florida legislature approved $1.5 million. That's chump change. Chump change. The total budget of the state of Florida is $70 billion. The Florida legislature approved $1.5 million to fund 30 rape crisis centers this fiscal year. But a few days ago, in the middle of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, Governor Rick Scott vetoed the budget line item. You can do that in Florida. And he vetoed the $1.5 million to fund 30 rape crisis centers. A liar, a spokesliar for the governor, said the allocation, the $1.5 million, is duplicative because sexual violence programs are already covered in the $70 billion budget. But Jennifer Dritt, the executive director of the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence, said, no, not true. She said information she provided the governor's office showed them that these rape crisis centers have waiting lists. How about that? A waiting list? I mean, you get on a waiting list when you go out to dinner. You get on a waiting list when you go to some public golf course. You get on a waiting list when you've been raped? Jennifer Dritt said, quote, survivors are having to wait weeks, sometimes 6 weeks. In some programs, 3 months to be seen. We sent the governor quotes from the programs about the waiting lists and what services they weren't able to offer because of a lack of money, she said. According to the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence's website, staffing shortages are de rigueur at the state's rape crisis programs, and fewer than 10% of them have enough financial resources to provide services most needed by rape victims. Florida ranks 47th in the nation in the number of rape crisis programs per capita, 47th. That means one crisis program exists for every 18,000 adult female survivors of rape. One crisis program for every 18,000 female survivors. Now, most of the existing programs that Governor Rick Scott says are duplications are education-oriented and don't deal with rape survivors' needs. See, that's how they get around it. Well, you know, we already have those. No, you don't. Jennifer Dritt says the program was, quote, thoroughly vetted, end quote, in the legislature and had the support of State Senator Elizabeth Benacquisto, a Republican of Fort Myers, and Representative Chris Dorworth, a Republican of Heathrow. According to her, the program that has been the $1.5 million that's been deep sixed met the criteria set forth by the governor for member projects. But he vetoed it. Why do you suppose Governor Rick Scott did that? So Florida will remain for yet another year on the bottom of the list of states for whom dealing with this crime, rape, is a priority. And they keep telling us there's no war on women, right? There's no war on women. That's a liberal mythology. $1.5 million out of a $70 billion budget. And Rick Scott vetoed it. Vetoed it.
Yeah. Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malone.
I'm gonna leave the city. Got to get
21
away.
Past the hour.
I'm gonna leave the city. Got to get away.
Lies. Man, they are just, they're thick. Did you hear the pig man is attacking Sandra Fluke again? Can you believe this guy? Go ahead, pig man. I really do believe that he finally has crossed that threshold of his use of narcotics and alcohol has finally gotten him to the point where he really he's become. I mean, he's always been totally narcissistic, but he's lost his ability to realize that he really stuck his foot and his ass and his legs and his whole corpulent body into a real stinking mess with the Sandra Fluke incident. So he goes after her again today. He said she has been coordinating with President Obama to scare students about the interest rates on their loans. Very soon now, the interest on student loans, by the way, student loans are now at $1 trillion. You wonder why? God, this country is just going to hell. I mean, come on. The interest rate is going to double very soon. What is it, a week, 10 days, a month? To 6.7 or 6.4% student loans, which means for an average student, this is average, not median, average, it's going to cost each American graduate an extra $5,000. Now, where does this money go? And it's going to take Congress to change the law to save students from going even deeper in debt. And what makes it worse is that the Bush economy denied graduates for the past 3 years employment. It's a horrible situation. During his radio show today, Limbaugh said that a tweet that Fluke sent, which said, many students will see the interest rate on federal student loans increase if Congress doesn't act by July 1st. So Limbaugh said that because of this, that she was coordinating with Obama, because today Obama mentioned the same thing. And because Sandra Fluke tweeted a couple hours before Obama made his speech, Limbaugh jumps on her like the fat bastard that he is, flattens her again. Limbaugh said about Sandra Fluke, he said that contraception isn't enough. And some people, I wonder who he's referring to, want their education paid for by other people too. What the hell is he talking about? Sandra Fluke pointed out that the interest rate is going to go up on student loans unless Congress acts. So this miserable son of a bitch Limbaugh, this piggish filth of a human being, lies. He says that Sandra Fluke wants her education paid for by other people. That's not what she wants. This is typical right wing. This is typical conservative. This is typical Joseph Goebbels. Just keep telling the lie over and over and over again. He also mocked Fluke as the person his listeners all knew for, quote, courageously and bravely fighting for contraception at Georgetown and wherever else it can be provided at no charge, end quote. Isn't he a wonderful man? Don't you right-wingers just love this lump of lard? Don't you love him? The stinking, filthy man. Don't you right-wingers, don't you so-called conservatives just love this guy, huh? Sure you do. After rereading her tweet where she said students will see their interest rate double if Congress doesn't act. After rereading it, Limbaugh went on to say, quote, Sandra Fluke is just a poor, isolated, alone little college student worried about her contraception in Georgetown. But now she's represented by the flacks in the White House, Hillary Rosen, Anita Dunn, and they're coordinating with Obama, scaring students about the interest rates on their student loans. End quote. Scaring students about the interest rate. So if you talk about it, you see what I mean? This filthy, stinking mass of flesh who makes about $50 million a year to do this? So he goes after Sandra Fluke again. Limbaugh, you're a cowardly son of a bitch if one ever existed. You really are. You're just a coward, a stinking, filthy coward. And you know you are a coward. But I think he's finally lost it. Just keep stuffing those cheeseburgers in, okay, Rush? Just keep stuffing them down your gullet.
Condescending tries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud, can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Care about the middle class because I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with the face of a horse's ass.
I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
story. I have a face the size of a wash tub, and my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This movie.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond. Tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
25 before
so
the hour.
Stick your little pins in that.
This hour is being sponsored by George Tertarian. And his message is a quote from Obama when Obama was a senator and then a candidate for president. The quote is, America deserves a leader who speaks truthfully about the Armenian genocide and who responds forcefully to all genocides. I intend to be their president, end quote. And as George Tertarian points out, President Obama has not uttered the words Armenian genocide since. Thanks for the sponsorship, George. Lies, lies, lies. That's kind of what we're talking about tonight. The fact that we are neck deep, eyeball deep in lies. Every single right winger on radio lies, usually about everything, but especially about Obama. The media lie. The talking heads on television lie. The political class in this country doesn't know anything but lies. But every single right winger, no matter if that person is in office, seeking office, doesn't matter. Evangelical Christians, every single one of them, lie upon lie upon lie. Oklahoma authorities are investigating whether the executive director of an international Christian ministry killed himself because he molested a 10-year-old girl, police said yesterday. Tom White. was the executive director for The Voice of the Martyrs, a nonprofit headquartered about 50 miles north of Tulsa, Oklahoma, in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Voice of the Martyrs said that it provided medical supplies, food, and clothing to persecuted Christians worldwide. Police found Mr. White's body at the organization's headquarters a couple of days ago. Employees discovered a letter in White's vehicle indicating he was suicidal and fleeing to avoid investigation. The letter was turned over to the police. Hastings, the police chief there, said they're awaiting an autopsy report by the state medical examiner's office. In a document filed last week in Washington County District Court in Oklahoma, police had asked a judge to order White's cell phone carrier to provide them with real-time GPS pinging of the phone to determine where he was. To support the request, officers stated in the document that Mr. White, quote, had been reported to have molested a 10-year-old female and that he disappeared when police began to investigate. In a statement posted on its website, the ministry, where White had served as executive director for more than 20 years, said its board of directors did not know about the accusations at the time of White's death. It went on to say that, quote, rather than face those allegations and all of the resulting fallout for his family and this ministry and himself, Tom appears to have chosen to take his own life, end quote. The statement added, there's no doubt that Tom cared about his wife, his children, and his grandchildren, and there's no doubt that he cared about Voice of the Martyrs. We're deeply saddened by these events. Our hearts are broken. Imagine the heart of the 10-year-old child that the 64-year-old monster decided to sexually abuse. Well, good for you, Tom. The only decent thing that you have done subsequent to your molesting of a 10-year-old was to kill yourself. And for that, you should be given a round of applause. Thank you, Tom. New York Times had another one of their scathing editorials the other day about Republicans. For months, House Republicans have been trying to wiggle out of the agreement they made in August. Remember, all Republicans are liars. They are filthy liars. They made an agreement back in August that will force deep cuts in military spending. Now, they have revealed how they propose to do that. They will take tens of billions out of programs for the poorest Americans, particularly food stamps, along with health care for the middle class. Pay attention. The House Agriculture Committee voted on Wednesday last to cut $33 billion over the next decade out of food stamps. Out of food stamps. That would immediately end benefits for 2 million people. Now, keep in mind that some people right now, because of the Bush economy, some people, the only income, so to speak, they have is food stamps. They're living on friends' couches or in relatives' basements, trying to maintain a family, trying to keep things together, trying not to go insane, trying not to turn to drugs or alcohol to ease the pain, trying to survive. And the only income they have, so to speak, is food stamps. So whoever provides them a place to stay, unless they're staying in a tent somewhere in a national park or a state park, that the only person providing them shelter might receive some of the benefit of these food stamps by the recipients buying food. But these filthy goddamn Republicans, see, this never stops, does it? It just keeps coming. They want to cut $33 billion out of food stamp programs, for Christ's sake. Literally. for Christ's sake. You phony, lying Republican Christians, you. Damn you. Damn you for doing this. 2 million people immediately would lose food stamps, and benefits for the remaining 44 million Americans who use the program would see their benefits reduced. A family of four would find their food stamp allotment lowered by $57 a month beginning in September. The House Agriculture Committee also trimmed job training for food stamp recipients by 72%, which means that 280,000 students would no longer be, or in addition, 280,000 students would no longer be eligible for free meals. Students, kids, see what these filthy bastards do? Do you get this? Do you understand who they attack? Republicans? Who they go after? Children, for Christ's sake! People on food stamps, unemployed, people who are already broken and trying to survive, and look what these pigs do! And there are millions of Americans who will vote for these monsters! Damn you, too. My God! Now, as the Times points out, to understand how callous this vote is, consider the choices the committee could have made, and the full House. The budget deal reached last August, the one the Republicans triggered with their disastrous debt ceiling crisis. Remember the deal? Calls for a painful sequester of $600 billion to both military and domestic spending over a decade. The Republicans could have accepted the military cuts they had agreed to, or they could have joined with Democrats in reducing the cuts by raising taxes on the rich. The 30% tax on millionaires. But no. Instead, the 2013 budget, the one written by Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, puts all the cuts on the domestic side. You see, there's a reason for this. Republican Mike Conway from Texas, representative from Texas, explained, you see, that the Constitution requires Congress to pay for defense, but that food stamps and other domestic programs are lower priorities. Oh, you know, defense. Defense against what? Your goddamn imagination? Defense? You religious freaks, what are you talking about? Man, there is a yawning, burning hell that you all invented waiting for you. Your own Son of God warned you over and over and over again. And you keep doing it. Okay.
And drown on the pain. I won't give up that easy, no. Too many time traps in the sands of time. Too many love affairs that stop on a dime. Well, all day, think it's time to make some change.
This hour has been sponsored by George Tutarian. And his message is a quote from a candidate, presidential candidate Barack Obama and Senator Barack Obama, quote, "America deserves a leader who speaks truthfully about the Armenian genocide and responds forcefully to all genocides. I intend to be that president," end quote. And as George points out, President Obama has not uttered the words Armenian genocide since then. Thanks for the sponsorship, George. Regarding lies, that's what we're talking about tonight, sorta. Jack in Shreveport writes, "Mike, I've sometimes speculated along the lines of religion that the devil or evil, as a real and practical matter, is actually the lie. Lies pollute society and the human condition like disease pollutes the body. Society simply cannot function properly when so many traitors, like cancerous cells, degrade the communications stream of society. The Republican Party contaminates what is basically the lifeblood of the community on every level. And their sympathizers, their propagandists, and their enablers bear responsibility, personal responsibility, for the ills they have heaped on society." Couldn't say it better myself, Jack in Shreveport. You know, if there is a difference in opinion, let's debate it. Let's see whose argument prevails. But to fill the political discourse with nothing but misleading information, half-truths, propaganda, twisted sentences, lies, which is what the right-wing talk show hosts have done since they first started filling the air with poison. Over and over and over again. Tomorrow, today, every single day it happens. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent. For the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie. And thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Think about the 8 years of Bush Cheney, this carnivorous son of a bitch who somehow managed to steal someone's heart. Think of the lie. The horrific lie that resulted in the murder of hundreds of thousands of people. Some of them not even born when the lie began. And what are the consequences that the carnivorous bastard who stole someone's heart and his poor little puppet George Bush, what are the consequences they are going to face? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. And we have people locked up for decades for armed robbery, assault, burglary, drug dealing. And yet these two and the people who grease the path for them, corporate America, all the people who worked in the Bush Justice Department, special counsels to the president, all of them guilty of perpetrating the lie for 8 years, to the point where there is no truth left in the political discourse coming from the right. Not a single sliver of truth. It's gone. It is totally, totally gone. And who cares? Well, it doesn't make any difference whether I or you or he or she cares at all. It doesn't make any difference. I don't think there's anything as corrosive. Well, there isn't anything as corrosive as lies. Man, I don't know how we keep going. Back to the callous choices perpetrated by the Republican House. Agriculture was one of six committees ordered to find cuts to protect the military budget. The military budget. The Ways and Means Committee in the House has to cut $53 billion. And its members have already begun talking most of that money, or taking most of that money out of health care reform, starting with subsidies for insurance exchanges. The Financial Services Committee is planning to save $35 billion by eliminating the FDIC's ability to take over failing banks and hobbling the new Consumer Protection, Financial Protection Bureau with a $5 billion cut. The Agriculture Committee, told to find $33 billion in cuts, could have substantially reduced the farm subsidies that now amount to more than $15 billion a year. Instead, the entire amount is coming out of food stamps. Food stamps. Food. Nutrition. They cut school lunch plans. They cut food stamps. They cut the WIC program. Women, infants, children. These filthy sons of bitches who swear their allegiance to a cluster of cells that haven't even, some of them haven't even differentiated yet. They're just a cluster of undifferentiated cells. Oh, that's holy and precious. But a five-year-old child, hell is waiting for you, you right-wingers, you Republicans. I swear to you, your hell is waiting for you. And it's going to fry your asses for all eternity. And you might as well prepare for it. You constructed the hell. It's where you're going to live. Think of this. Seven past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Stokes Redovol. Thanks, Stokes. No message, just sponsorship. Thanks very much, Stokes. Well, phone lines are open if you want to join in. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Rick is in Hayward, California. Hey, Rick. Hello, Rick. There we go. Me? Hi, Rick.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. I had two things to bring up. The first thing was, it's more of a scientific thing. I don't really give a hill of beans about the electronic voting. I was just curious as to, in these primaries, I wonder if the results match the polls better than they match on the other elections.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't have the expertise to study all that, but it'd be interesting if the polls matched the electronic voting, because there's no motivation to mess with the results. But that's,
you know, who would have information on that, and this is his area of expertise is Brad Friedman, who substitutes for me frequently. Matter of fact, he's going to be substituting this Friday. But if you go to his website, bradblog.com. And look around. He may have some stuff up now about exactly what you're talking about, whether or not the primary voting corresponds with the what the machines spit, or the results the primary voting corresponds with, or whatever it was you said. But Brad Friedman at bradblog.com would have information about that. What was the other thing?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I have two other things. But
sure.
One of them is kind of a humorous thing about Fukushima, which is a horrible situation. This is ridiculous. I heard on the TV, back last month when they were doing a little bit of review, somebody said on one of the newscasts,
uh-huh.
They said Fukushima is not quite ready to go back online yet.
Oh my God! That was on a national television news?
It was one of the main, the main three newscasts.
Oh my God!
It's just so totally out there. I have a hard time getting news. I'm right here near San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention is this ongoing thing about protesting and the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went to a protest. I'm a medical cannabis patient,
mm-hmm.
and the federal government has shut down a lot of the local dispensaries. So now, there was a demonstration on April 3rd in front of the federal building, and it was pretty interesting. The only thing I remember is a lot of glass and a lot of fat cops behind the glass.
Hmm.
And we did kind of shouting and holding signs. And
now, this was in support of medical marijuana and against the intrusion of the federal government?
Yeah, we have a federal prosecutor named Melinda Haig,
mm-hmm.
in San Francisco, and she's basically saying they're going to take away all the stores that sell, that have a storefront, and because she wants to protect the children, she says.
And protect what children?
They're going to take out any dispensary that's near a school first, they said.
Well, why? I mean, a kid can't walk in and get any reefer.
No, you got to be at least 21 and have your all your paperwork.
Right. So in other words, the woman is lying.
Yeah, it's like they're hiding behind the kids. They're using that as justification,
mm-hmm.
which is like, way just... And this kind of stuff is, how we have kind of a permissive attitude about wrongdoing in this country. I mean, if Cheney and Bush can get away with what they did, this other stuff is, trivial, like a lie or, a misstatement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just... I have a stress-related disease, and all this stuff, I have Lyme disease.
Oh, my God.
And all this stuff piled on top of it, it's just kind of really bad. They say, they're not going to take out they're not going to hurt the patients, just the ones that are supplying them.
Oh, no, that's a neat trick. Is this prosecutor a Democrat or Republican? Is she nonpartisan? What is she?
My guess is it's another Bush holdover that Obama let him, mm-hmm. tolerate, never took him out. When, I think typically a new president has a whole new turnover.
Well,
didn't do that.
Yeah, they have a right to do that, but you're right. Obama, Obama was, I think, too afraid to make any kind of overt move that could be, interpreted as being partisan on any level. And as a result, the Republicans have beat his ass bloody and continue to do so and will continue to do so until a time when the Democrats, all the way up to Obama, develop some spine and tells the Republicans to go straight to hell, which is where they all belong anyway. It's a shame that this medical marijuana issue has become so politicized by so many different politicians. It sucks. It's disgusting, and I don't know. It's just one more thing that shows the triviality of these politicians. I mean, there are serious issues to deal with, and whether or not somebody is smoking marijuana, whether they need it for medical reasons or not, is just beyond crazy to be focusing on that. It's just beyond crazy. It makes no sense whatsoever. I hear you. All right, Rick, thanks, man.
Sure.
I appreciate you checking in. Call us again. Rick's comments reminded me of this past Sunday, New York Times Sunday Magazine. The entire issue was dedicated to a brain chemistry, brain a function, kind of the cutting edge of, finding out all the different aspects of, or as many as they can, of brain function to use that in treating disorders, whether they are, you know, emotional or mental disorders, whether it is anything from depression to Alzheimer's. And, of course, the articles went beyond that. And one of the articles addressed head on these experiments that are being conducted now using psilocybin, you know, so-called magic mushrooms, using psilocybin with people who are terminally ill, who are facing imminent death, and who are not coping with that very well at all, that reality. Of course, you know, the irony is that everyone faces death. It's always there. But unlike Buddhists, we don't wake up every morning and say, ah, it's a good day to die. So, you know, death is something that we keep pushing aside. No, not me. Or we just don't think about it. Denial and avoidance kind of thing. But some people who are given a diagnosis of, well, you have 4 to 16 months to live because you have terminal cancer or you have terminal whatever. And then it becomes a vocation to figure out how to live whatever time is left. And the article was pointing out several case histories of people who had to make these kinds of decisions. And the experiments with psilocybin, almost 100% show that people who are desperately dealing with the inability to accept what has to be accepted, what happens to them after they have a session or two on psilocybin, how they are able to process in an entirely different way their own mortality. Very interesting stuff. And one of the questions in the article was, if it works for people who are terminally ill, why not use this for people who are not?
That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that it's now.
Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, I hate to get started on the drug legalization discussion because it's just another one of those issues that to me has driven this country even further and further into mass insanity, especially where it concerns psilocybus mushrooms or peyote cactus buds or marijuana plants or opium poppies or chewing coca leaves. Now, some of the stuff can be turned very toxic through the process of refining coca into cocaine, opium poppies into heroin. We all understand that. But to even be having a debate about marijuana is, to me, just total insanity. Marijuana. Even if you only take the tack of buy domestic, which is the best reefer there is the marijuana that comes from certain parts of the country, including Northern California, including North Central Florida, and stop the influx of marijuana that's grown and brought to this country, saturated in blood and death and machine gun bullets and people decapitated and wars. You know what I'm saying? My God. And then if you really want to get funky with the whole idea, just think about this enormous cash crop that if we had a government that made sense, i.e. a government that was not one that says, well, cigarettes will be legal, but marijuana will not. Cigarettes will kill 600,000 people this year. Marijuana will kill no one. Cigarettes are taxed to the point now that what? How much is a pack of cigarettes? $5-6 a pack in New York City? Just put a nice 10% surtax on marijuana. Now, don't freak out. I mean, if you're a grower or you're a user or, you know, whatever. That's 10% surtax on marijuana. Do the same kind of thing. Declare tobacco illegal and make marijuana legal and take the tobacco farmers and say, okay, we're going to take away your 3-acre allotment of tobacco and, you know, government subsidized death, and we're going to let you grow 3 acres of marijuana. Oh, no, that's too crazy. Can't do that. But I don't even like to get into a discussion about legalization or decrim or whatever about marijuana, because it's madness to me. It's just total insanity. The fact that a couple of people 70, 80 years ago decided that marijuana was, that was the Mexican drug, right? Cocaine was the African-American drug. The poor white people, they were just surrounded. They were surrounded. You had the immigrants, the Chinese were bringing opium, and the black folk were doing cocaine, and the Mexicans were doing marijuana, and the poor Caucasoids. Oh my God! We're surrounded by stoned foreigners and, well, you know, African Americans were not immigrants, they were imports. We're surrounded! Quick, pass laws! It's corrupting our youth. Oh, my God. So what do white folks do now? Do you ever go to your local traveling carnival? Kathy and I play this little game when we see these little traveling carnivals that set up in shopping mall parking lots or somewhere on the edge of town, or even in the center of Atlanta. Sometimes they'll have these things, and we will go for the sure hell of it. We'll take Molly so she can ride some of the rides. Molly is a freak for these rides, but Kathy and I will walk along, and the little midways and the ride operators, and we'll count teeth in the mouths of these people, because every one of them is a meth freak. And they're taking, and you can look at these people. I'm sorry, if you're a carny, tough. If you feel like you're being picked on tonight, you are. You're out of your goddamn minds with this fake methamphetamine that you're honking up your noses, the crystal and all this stuff that is made in the backs of station wagons or in some Hicks kitchen someplace, and you're ramming this stuff up your nose, and once you take the first hit, you're an addict. You're gone. You're dead meat. You're never coming back. And you know what it does? It makes you look ugly. It makes you look like a corpse before you really are one. It's insanity, and it's all made out of industrial solvents and chemicals that get up inside your body and just goddamn kill you. And all you have to do is find some real good prime primo marijuana and smoke a joint, and it won't do any of that at all.
Don't play with me.
Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Stokes Redabaugh. Thank you, Stokes, very much. Michael in Roswell writes regarding drugs. The war on drugs is 100 years old this year. The Harrison Act was passed in 1912. So we've been trying to legislate dependency out of existence for a century now. That's worked out well, huh? And is this time to say that all the evidence points to the fact that the people who don't want anyone to smoke dope are actually the ones getting progressively stupider over time? Yeah, that would be an appropriate time to say that. Absolutely. Phone calls. Yes, Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hello, Jim.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
You are, pal.
Yeah, well, you're doing another one of your great shows, man. You are so spot on.
Well, thanks.
I'm weekly impressed, more impressed. But,
Jim, I don't know what that was, but if you can make it go away, I'll come back to you. So we'll try again. Steve is in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hey, Mr. Malloy.
Hey, Mr. Steve, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, a little off topic. I heard your last part. Yeah, my cousin got hooked on meth, and it really messed up his life, and he got in prison. And
Who got hooked on it?
My cousin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, bad deal all around. It really messed up his life. But anyways, besides that, I was calling because I read last week in an article that Nancy Pelosi was talking about amending the First Amendment to limit free speech.
Now, where did you read this?
I told you to call screen. I don't remember. I read it last week.
Well, it would have to be in some crazy right-wing publication because, in the first place...
Neither
Nancy Pelosi nor any member of Congress has the power to amend anything. Do you know, where it concerns the Constitution, do you know what is required to amend the Constitution?
Yeah, it's two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate, and three-quarters of the state.
Whoever wrote the article must be insane to suggest that Nancy Pelosi wants to.
The thing that caught me off guard, Mr. Malloy, was that it wasn't from a right-wing thing. That's what I first...
Well, Nancy Pelosi has no power except... Nancy Pelosi has no power except whatever power comes from her seniority. She's in the minority party. She can't even initiate something like this.
Okay. I mean, what it was saying, and like I said, this was from a neutral source, which has really caught me off guard.
Well, I don't think so. Trust me, Steve. There is no. Why would did it say why she wants to change? What part of the First Amendment did she want to change?
Well, she didn't want corporations to be able to. Have any say in campaigns.
Well, that has nothing to do. If that's what she wants to do, then there ought to be legislation passed that bars corporations and word the legislation this time so that it is specific. The only reason the Supreme Court ruled...
Would that affect unions then?
What?
Would that affect unions?
You said corporations. What do you want to talk about? Unions or corporations?
Well, I'm just wondering if it is for corporations, would it affect unions?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how the law was written. Wait a second, Steve. Let me put you on hold because, first of all, you're coming through kind of broken. I will try this. If Congress wants to get money, corporate money, out of elections, they can begin the process of doing so by writing legislation that is specific to non-human entities throwing money into a political process. It would then be, once that were passed, which it would never pass, I don't think, but if it did pass, then there would be immediate challenge, and it would go to the Supreme Court once again. The Citizens United case was not about corporations and money. It was about a film that was made by a right-wing organization regarding Hillary Clinton, I believe, and a couple of TV stations or a network or something, it's all foggy to me now, refused to run it. And the people who made the movie sued, and it worked its way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court then, being a right-wing neo-fascist organization, legislated from the bench. The argument in front of them had nothing to do with unlimited corporate money going into political campaigns or super PACs. Nothing. But the Supreme Court ruled in that moment that it was okay to do that. Now, if I've got this wrong, I'm sure either Michael in Roswell or Prairie 2 will let me know. Or maybe Reg, my brain trust, so to speak. But, you know, Nancy Pelosi or Abe Snake or Eric Cantor or, you know, the janitor in the House of Representatives. If that's what you were talking about, Steve, about some individual limiting... In the first place, corporations don't have any speech. They can't talk. They're just filings in a cabinet somewhere in a lawyer's office. There's no such thing as corporate speech. What the hell is that? That's a capitalist term. Corporations don't talk. Trees don't talk unless you're doing peyote. Rocks, well, okay, if you're doing peyote, they'll talk too. But corporations don't talk. Gas station pumps don't talk. Cars don't talk. None of this stuff talks. So when you talk about limiting corporate speech, you might as well be talking about flying reindeer or bugs coming out of people's ears when they blow their nose. Does that make sense, Steve?
Mr. Malloy.
I guess it didn't. Steve, I'm going to move on. I appreciate your call. I really do. But, that's enough. Thank you. I wonder if that was blue.
Tom has an answer.
Tom is in Arizona listening on XM. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
All right. Okay, hey. That guy, what he's talking about is limiting campaign donations from corporations.
Yeah.
That's what he's talking about. And I think that guy's trying to play dumb. He knows what Nancy's trying to do.
Uh-huh.
He sounds like he came right on over from the right-wing camp somewhere.
I hear that.
And I'm with you. I'm sick of these large corporations or people that own these corporations donating money and buying our legislators.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Now, if that's what she's talking about, if she's talking about passing legislation to take away from these filthy corporations the right to, or the people who run the corporate, the corporations don't do anything. They're just papers. You know what I'm saying, Tom?
That's right.
I mean,
there's
no such thing. I mean, that's like something out of a horror movie. Here comes a corporation, thud, thud, thud. You know, it's the people who run them. So the whole thing is a phony, fake ass argument to begin with.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's what we need to start saying, is the corporate owners.
There you go.
All right. Hey, you have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, if any member of Congress wants to begin the process of introducing legislation to limit the corrupting influence of money in politics or the influence of the corporate owners and CEOs hiding behind the corporate papers, fine, begin the process. But I think Tom was right. I think the caller from Nebraska was just kind of being a dick, if you know what I mean, knowing full well that There is no such thing as corporate speech. What the hell is that? I mean, corporations don't talk. The attorneys hired by the CEO do the talking, or the board of directors. But honest to God, corporations don't talk. They don't have any rights. They don't walk. They don't vote. But the people who run the corporations can use that as a way of totally destroying the political system in this country, which they're doing a damn good job of. And it doesn't have to be even corporations. It can be these ultra-wealthy, rich bastards like Edelman, the guy that ran Newt Gingrich's campaign with all the money. I mean, these are swine. It can be like the Koch brothers. These are swine. They're destroyers. They're horrible. But corporations don't talk.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah, 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Stokes Redabaugh. Thank you, Stokes. I appreciate it very much. Very much. Thank you. Nick is in Poconos, PA. Or Mac, I'm sorry. Hey, Mac.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good, I'm just watching returns here, and Matt Cartwright is beating Holden, which is a good deal.
That must be a local race.
Yeah, well, it's for Congress, you know. Holden was always with the Republicans. He was a blue dog.
Oh, I see. You
know? So, anyway, I wanted to call and say that I think that eventually we're going to do okay. I might not live to see it. But as a Hispanic vote, you know, gets greater and greater, I think they will crush these right-wing swine balls. You know, I just think that the tide is going to come in our favor.
I hope you're right. You know, I hope you're right, Mac. And I can say the same thing. I may not be alive to see it either. I hope that something happens. I would hope that just Americans who are adult and who vote would wake up, whether they're Hispanic, African, Asian, European, you know, regardless of what their background is, if they just wake up and realize that right-wing Republicans, most of whom, not all, most of whom are European Americans, they are trying to turn the country fascist.
And
it has to be stopped. And this is where Democratic politics always was so effective, because it was coalition politics. It might have been people who wouldn't go have a beer together, but they would work together politically to stop fascism. And and that's gone now. And I hope it comes back. I know what you're talking about. I hope it comes back.
Well, I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen. I don't know if I'll see it. I'm a Navy veteran, and I've been a liberal my whole life. And my son just graduated from boot camp up in Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I kind of indoctrinated him in my philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I love this country, but I don't like what they do to it. I have no respect for them. And I don't know. It's just it's always been this way, though. It's always been pushing, you know, from one side to the other. But the truth of the matter is, hopefully, as the Hispanic population grows, they will, you know, they will do away with the Republican Party, because that would be the best day of my life.
It would me too.
Serious.
It would
serious.
Me too. Well, you know,
now, not all of us on the left are what they make us out to be.
Right.
I mean, that's why I brought up, you know, I'm a veteran and my son just got out of boot camp.
Right.
You know, they try to make themselves out to be better Americans than we are.
And they're not.
No. No, they don't understand. They just don't get it.
Well, you know, what you said, Mac, about you love the country, but the way things are going, yeah, I feel the same way. Leonard Cohen, the songwriter, singer-songwriter, poet, has a song, and he's got a line in it that says, I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And he's talking about the United States. He's from Canada, but, you know, he spends a lot of time here in the States. And that's the line that I know exactly. When I first heard that, I thought, oh, my God, I know exactly what he means. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. I can't stand what is happening here. Mac, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in very much. I hope you call again. Take care, sir. Roberta is in Casca, Minnesota. Hello, Roberta.
Hi. I was calling that gentleman who called about the Nancy Pelosi wanting to amend the Constitution. She did in a press conference, and other Democrats have backed her up on this, say that they, if the Citizens United is, if they consider corporations to their money to be free speech, then we need to tighten up our free speech amendment to only refer to people and not corporations.
Well, I don't think the First Amendment needs any tightening at all, because it's pretty explicit. You know, the framers were dealing with people. We're all dealing with people. So I think what has to be, I don't think the Constitution, the First Amendment of the Constitution, has to be tampered with at all. I just think that laws have to be written by the Congress.
It's part of they also want to write a law to overturn Citizens United.
Yes.
She said that she wanted, it wasn't to change the First Amendment. She wanted an amendment to, if corporations were going to have free speech, then she wanted an amendment to regulate them. And then they want the Disclose Acts. They call it, I was reading, a three-pronged strategy that includes promoting the Disclose Act. You know what that is. And then the thing for the Citizens United, and then tightening up the
right.
Constitution as far as that goes. If that's what they're gonna, if that's the only way to get the courts to see reality, I think is what they mean.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense, Roberta. I know that there is a move afoot led by and involving only Democrats to try to get this horrific ruling by the right wing Supreme Court to be nullified. And the way to do that is to write a law, as you're suggesting. Now, if that's what Pelosi was talking about, that makes sense. But to say that Pelosi, the right wing, now is probably saying that Pelosi wants to change the Constitution, which is madness. I don't know why they hate Pelosi. Pelosi had a chance to end the Bush-Cheney reign of terror, and she didn't. Quick break coming up here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. The Molloy Program. Glad you're still here. We're just joining. Hey, Earth Day, you know, we mentioned it yesterday that Monday. Let's see. Now, let me get it right. Monday, yesterday, we mentioned that Sunday had been Earth Day, April 22nd, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that was amazing to me, it was Earth Day was like 42 years old, which is pretty astonishing, especially when you consider that the Earth has deteriorated considerably in those 42 years, you know, which is kind of funny in a macabre sort of way. I mean, it's all horrible. Everything's horrible. So, you know, might as well accept that and try to find the humor. But anyway, I forgot to mention that how we spent our Earth Day. The reason this came to mind, I was looking at my email today, and I got an email from Sand, and the subject line, how I spent Earth Day. So I opened up Sand's email and took a look, and it was all very interesting. I'll share it with you in a second. And the way we spent our Earth Day, Saturday night, we had a whole bunch of brownies come spend the night. I mean, you know, little girl brownies. Kathy is a scout leader, troop leader. And they're all going on a real honest-to-God camping trip next weekend. So we had a sleepover Saturday, kind of a trial, where Kathy was showing the kids how they're going to be cooking over an open fire. That was fun. That reminded me of the things I learned as a Boy Scout. But they're all out there. We had a fire pit in the backyard, and they made chicken chunks and campfire pizza, they call it, and s'mores, of course, always s'mores, and corn on the cob. That they, you know, the way they cook it, it was different from the way we did as Boy Scouts. But still, it's all campfire cooking, and then sleeping out. And it rained like hell here that night until about midnight, and then stopped. But it was cold and wet, and they all slept on our screened-in back porch, and it was great fun. I mean, the little girls had a wonderful time. I retreated to the far end of the house and, you know, watched movies on Turner Network Network Television. And Kathy stayed out with the girls, of course. So it was kind of like a rehearsal for the big event that comes up this weekend, where they're going to be out for 2 nights doing camping in the woods, a long way away from any civilization. So the next morning was Earth Day. And we got all the kids out. Parents came and picked them up around 10 or 11. And then we decided what to do for Earth Day. Well, it so happens that about a year before Molly was born, we had visited and spent some time at a fertility clinic. And the reason, of course, is try to get for Kathy to get pregnant. Okay, hold your jokes, hold your punchlines, you know, you really don't have to. But as it turned out, we didn't have to do that, but we spent some time with people at this clinic. They're like 10 or 12 doctors, and they help people become pregnant. And so 7 years later, 8 years later, they, for the first time, they held this big reunion on Earth Day at one of the parks, Grant Park in Atlanta. It has nothing to do with the Ulysses B. Grant, different Grant, huge park. And so we went on Earth Day to this reunion of all the moms and dads and all the kids. And we'd never seen so many triplets and twins as we saw at that event. So it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I swear to God, there must have been finally a couple thousand people there before the day was over. But that's how we spent Earth Day. And then we went, biking someplace in a different park, Piedmont Park. Anyway. During that whole day, it never occurred to either Kathy or me, nor did it occur to Molly that it was Earth Day, or Molly would have had us out picking up cans or something off the street. And, of course, I've tried to explain to her that recycling is a good idea, but it really doesn't affect the global climate change that we're all going to have to deal with, that her generation is going to have to tackle, since my generation is useless, totally useless. So I get this email this morning. That's how we spent our Earth Day. I get this email this morning from Sand earlier today, how I spent Earth Day. And, of course, I read this and immediately felt guilty. But, you know, that's all right. I've done a lot of demonstrations. We'll do more. I've been arrested. We'll be arrested again in the future, I'm sure. But I read what Sand wrote. And there's a link here that I want to give you where you can go look at some videos. This is what Sand wrote. Hi, Mike. Those of us in upstate drone action groups went to Mattydale, New York, near Syracuse, for a peaceful walk on Earth Day. We were heading to Hancock Air Base, where drone aircraft have been operating since, from which drone aircraft have been operating since 2009. Last year, we had a walk and then a rally. We had gotten a permit, and we had a rally on the grass outside the gate. 38 folks laid down in the drive under bloody shrouds, and everybody was arrested. This year, we were not going to have a rally. We were just going to do a peaceful, silent walk with two drums and a lot of anti-war, anti-drone murder signs. When we reached the town line of DeWitt, Hancock Air Force Base is in DeWitt, there were sheriff's cars galore waiting for us. They made 33 preemptive arrests. That is to say that when we told the cops that we were going to continue walking on the road, we were arrested. So on Earth Day, 20 cop cars idling, a huge Greyhound-sized black prisoner bus idling for hours. Yeah. I had driven and parked where we have always parked. A cop told me as I got my sign from the trunk of my car, if you take one step with that sign, you will be arrested. I said, well, how about if I put my sign back? You will still be arrested. Here is our website in case you might wish to see some pics and read more. Well, what's at their website? A couple of videos. And I want you to go look at this. Upstate Drone Action. UpstateDroneAction.org. Okay, you got that? UpstateDroneAction.org. The first video that you click on has about 30 seconds of video and then some stills. Go to the second video, and there's 22-minute video there that is very, very interesting. UpstateDroneAction.org. And Sam says, after the arrest on Sunday, as I headed home and drove past the base, there were two sheriffs and two young camo fatigue outfitted soldiers high-fiving at the gate. They stopped our demonstration for now, but 33 people will be testifying regarding our First Amendment rights soon. Peace and love, Sand. P.S. One cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. So if you want to see something worth looking at, it's a small demonstration, maybe 80, 100 people, and it's worth the look. And thanks to Sand for sending it. Upstate Drone Action. UpstateDroneAction.org. Go take a look, and there's also some stuff to read there. Protests against the drone aircraft that are being used to kill people in God knows where. I mean, who knows anymore where these aircraft? We know Afghanistan and Pakistan, but beyond that, who knows? It's all very classified, don't you know? All right, UpstateDroneAction.org is a website. Go check it out. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Now, does anybody know who Ken Welton is? Talk about Earth Day here. He has a website, earthcommandments.com. Earthcommandments.com. Like Ten Commandments? There are Ten Commandments there, but they are Earth Commandments. Ken wrote, so I was thinking, you might see something about Earth Day in the LA Times, the Orange County Register, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, about the events here in our land, in Washington, D.C., and other places on Earth, but not a thing in these papers. This gives you some idea of the mentality of the, quote, free, end quote, corporate press about what once was, can, and will continue to be a great event on this planet, Earth Day. Aside from the surprising media lack of interest in the freest country in the world, the EarthDay.org site reports the following. 1 billion people celebrated Earth Day in 192 countries. From Cairo to Beijing, Melbourne, Australia to Rome, Rio de Janeiro to St. Louis, communities everywhere stood united in their effort to mobilize the Earth. In Iraq, the Ministry of Education sent Earth Day materials to schools around the country and engaged more than 1 million students in 3,000 schools in Earth Day activities. In Seoul, South Korea, a local organization mobilized a community gathered to learn about environmental issues and perform acts of environmental service. In Bujaid, Morocco, a local group of students organized a trash cleanup and tree planting to help green their community. In Selangor, Malaysia, hundreds of people removed debris and litter from a local waterfall in an effort to restore and preserve their natural environment. In Washington, D.C., thousands gathered for the flagship Earth Day event that featured prominent civic leaders, environmental activists, celebrities, and musical acts. Globally, more than 56,000 university students rallied their campuses in honor of Earth Day to take action and call for a sustainable future. Thousands of faith leaders challenged their communities to become better stewards of the planet. Tens of thousands of schools organized educational activities for kids, and over 600 elected officials voiced the support for the planet by attending local Earth Day events. Now, all of that is from EarthDay.org. Ken goes on, so 1 billion or so got into the swing of things. Very nice, encouraging. But here in the USA, while there may have been some inspiring events around the country, most of us would never have known it, given the lack of importance attached to the idea and the Earth Day events in the media. And why isn't this a holiday? So then many of us missed a chance to, again, understand and renew the ethic, the mission, and partake of an uplifting Earth Day event in our depressed and depressing lives. Even Obama's speech was a lifeless, energy-oriented, same stump speech without much inspiring vision into the natural world we inherit and inhabit. Several decades ago, this same dismal and detached attitude toward our only world inspired me to write the Earth Commandments. I must have figured that's what people pay attention to, commandments. Give it a hoary, biblical feel, and that just might do it. So, take my commandments, please. Surely a little worldwide cooperation on these few here would make this planet of ours a lot nicer and more livable. You can see the Ten Commandments, the Earth Commandments, at earthcommandments.com. And then Ken included them for me here. I would rather have you go check it out yourself. EarthCommandments.com. See what Ken Welton wrote. 1 billion people, huh? Who'd have thunk it? I have no idea. All we did was clean up after 9 brownies and recycle everything. And, of course, Kathy teaches them. They've earned a couple of little brownie merit. We call them merit badges. I don't know what that. What do they call them in brownies? Badges, badges. When I was in Boy Scouts, merit badges. But they're just brownie badges, and they have earned several now based on awareness, self-awareness, where it concerns your footprint on this planet. And I think of all the things that these little girls are learning through Kathy's teaching them. I mean, give credit where credit's due. A year ago at this time, Kathy never would have thought she would wind up being a scout troop leader. But the process of her education, so she can teach these little girls, has really been something to see. We'll be back when we come back. Fun with Mitt Romney.
And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them.
Cuddle up, truth seekers. Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Maybe I could try that again. 25 before the hour. So Mitt Romney. Ow! Has Mitt Romney really... I don't know. This has got to come under the heading of fun. Absolute fun. Mitt Romney has now scorfed up the, for all intents and purposes, the Republican nomination for president. You know, he's going to take on Barack Obama. Of course, Barack Obama is going to pound him into the sand. But in the meantime, we have Mitt Romney. Romney is now trying to undo some of the damage that he had to do during the primary season. You know, he had to out-fascist the fascists. He had to out-religion the religionists. He had to out-bigot the bigoters. And, you know, he did a good job. He came across as a total moron. That's why he won so many primaries. The people voting in the Republican primaries are all morons. I mean, they're completely clueless. They do what they're told to do, but some of them slipped through the cracks and voted for Romney. And the reason? Well, Romney looks like a president. Right? So now the right wing is choking on its own bile. This is great. I love this. You realize what Romney did. He has appointed Richard Grenell, an openly gay man, as his national security and foreign policy spokesperson. Now, apparently this is a double controversy, partly due to the outrage now from social conservatives. Oh my God! He appointed a gay man! Oh my God! And partly because of the very sexist, kind of nasty, yet funny tweets that this guy had sent prior to his appointment, most of which have been scrubbed from his Twitter site. They're still available. You can find them online. But now, this guy worked under the Bush administration until September 2008 as a spokesman for John Bolton, the uber fascist, who was temporary U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. It was a recess appointment because nobody would have voted for Bolton. Bolton, you talk about loose cannon. This is a guy who would just as soon start throwing nukes at China tomorrow and send a murder team to get Chavez and Castro. I mean, Bolton is out of his goddamn mind. He is literally insane. This is a guy, he's a Christian crazy person who wants blood rolling across the planet like a tidal wave. Hopefully that will, you know, bring his redeemer. I don't know what his mindset is, but he's literally nuts. Of all the people I said, oh, they're nuts. No. Bolton really is crazy. He would make Dick Cheney look lucid, rational, human. Anyway, I digress. So Richard Grenell worked for Bolton. He was a spokesperson for him. I tell you that just to kind of so you can place him on the doomsday clock. He's Bolton's boy, but he's also a gay man. And in an interview with The Advocate a couple of years ago, he had spoken of his hope to marry his partner of 10 years in New York. Whether that's happened, who knows? Andrew Sullivan, the conservative blogger and gay man who endorsed Obama in 2008, said of this appointment, quote, this is what Andrew Sullivan said, quote, for Romney to have an openly gay spokesman is a real outreach to gay Republicans. It's a subtle signal to moderates, and the Santorum faction's reaction will be worth noting. End quote. Worth noting. They're choking. They're turning red. They're falling on the floor. They're going out of their minds. Now, the vice president of Human Rights Campaign, primarily a gay rights, a constitutional rights organization, a guy named Fred Sayens said that having worked with Grenell in the past, and despite disagreeing with him politically, he, Fred Sayens, was glad of his appointment to be represented in the Romney campaign. You know, for obvious reasons. Come on. I mean, there's no problem here. But, da-da, this appointment, which was announced over the weekend, has really thrown some social and religious conservatives into, I like to use the word apoplexy, but that would be, I don't know, like saying hiccup. I mean, these people are going absolutely, they're holding their breath, they're peeing their pants, they're screaming, and the one screaming perhaps the loudest and peeing all over the room is Brian Fisher of the American Family Association down in Mississippi. Now, this morning, I flipped on CNN, and there was Kira, what's her name, interviewing this freak, Brian Fisher. And he was there. He was denouncing Grenell as an out and loud gay, and that Romney's appointment was quote a message to the pro family community to drop dead. Really? I mean, is that how you right wing crazy foaming at the mouth Republican freaks see this? Really? Okay. Good. Yay! Way to go, Mitt. Way to go. See, Mitt's doing his damnedest now, right? He has Marco Polo show up with him at a rally. And next to Romney, doesn't Marco Rubio look like he's about 14? I mean, he looks like he should not be a senator? Is he a senator or a representative? He's a senator? I don't know what he is. Representative? It doesn't matter. But he looks like instead of being in Congress, he should be delivering newspapers someplace, you know, on his bicycle. But so there's Romney making nice with Marco Polo, trying to appease the Hispanic community in this country that the Republicans have absolutely, totally alienated. And then on the other hand, Mitt appoints an openly gay man, a Republican, log cabin Republican, openly gay man to be his foreign policy advisor in an attempt to reach out to the gay community. And as I just said, you maybe send a subtle signal, as Andrew Sullivan said, to send a subtle little signal to the moderates. See, Mitt isn't all that bad. He will hire a gay man. Ooh, please. So anyway, Brian Fisher, and this guy, Brian Fisher I have never seen anyone who was so scary as Brian Fisher when he gets on there and starts his God talk. And his, oh, loving Christian talk. Oh, yes, but those queers. Oh, God, they're the spawn of Satan. You know the type. You know the type. Now, Brian Fisher, today, got his ass all out on Twitter saying, quote, Romney's gay hire would serve in his administration in national security. You want to tell me there's no Secret Service type risk here? I think all the people busted in Columbia, Fisher, you half-wit, were heteros. Now, Fisher and Romney have had their little disagreements before. During a conservative conference last autumn, according to pinknews.co.uk, during an event last autumn, Romney denounced Fisher's use of, quote, poisonous language, end quote, against his perceived opponents. Well, yeah, Fisher is with the American Family Association. He is an evangelical Christian. Of course he uses poisonous language. Of course he uses images of death and destruction. He's a Christian. He's an evangelical Christian. Of course he talks about how rotten and filthy gay people are. Rotten and filthy this group is. Rotten and filthy Mormons are. Rotten and filthy liberals are. He's a Christian. What do you expect him to say? Well, he's a Christian as they're currently defined. He's not a follower of Jesus. And there is a huge difference. But Romney's appointment has caused further troubles here for the Romney campaign, thanks to Richard Grenell himself. Seems like he's a real wit, and he tweets things that are kind of sexist and kind of ugly and kind of nasty. Like one of them said, Hillary is starting to look like Madeleine Albright, and another one said he tweeted, and his target was Callista Gingrich, Newt's third wife, and Richard Grenell said in this tweet, Callista stands there like she's wife number one. Do you think Callista's hair snaps on? which I think is pretty funny. I mean, you're not supposed to say things like that because they're terribly sexist or something else would be terribly racist or terribly this or terribly that. And I agree. But here's this guy saying, do you think Callista's hair snaps on? And the quick answer is, of course. Of course it does. So this is the guy that, and he also went after Rachel Maddow. He said he described Rachel Maddow as a dead ringer for Justin Bieber and that she should take a breath and occasionally wear a necklace. And Rachel responded by asking on her show whether Romney's campaign wondered whether, quote, a long string of really nasty sexist tweets about Callista Gingrich's appearance might be alienating to people who might otherwise consider voting for Mr. Romney. Well, way to go, Rachel. I mean, that's a snappy comeback, I guess. But, this guy, it's going to be great to watch the Romney campaign self-immolate. It's just going to be great fun. Richard Grenell, an openly gay man, as Romney's national security and foreign policy spokesperson, the part of it that is really intriguing to me is the reaction by this crazed psychopath, Brian Fisher of American Family Association. And I don't understand how appointing a man who happens to be homosexual to a position of foreign policy spokesperson or national security spokesperson, how is that an invitation to Christians to die? But that's what Fisher's saying. It's an invitation. It's a message to the pro-family community to drop dead. Where's the connection? Hi, I'm appointing this guy to be my foreign policy advisor. Ooh! Oh, and by the way, all Christians now die! What the hell? But I told you, Brian Fisher is a total maniac. A real... a real jerk. But I, oh God, I hope he keeps talking. There he was on CNN this morning with his huge shock of white hair. A very handsome man with the look on his face like he'd just as soon cut your goddamn heart out as look at you. Explaining to Kira... that's right, Phillips. What's it? Not Kira, but is it Kira Phillips? Yeah, Kira Phillips. Explaining to Kira why Romney's appointment of an openly gay man is another sign of the imminent apocalypse. I mean, to watch these slobbering freaks try to link destruction of humanity with, I don't know, in this case, a gay person being appointed, a very conservative gay person. Oh, Jesus. Oh, it's an invitation for good people to die. What a sick bastard. I mean, Brian Fisher, what a sick skunk. Now, Grinnell apologized for his tweets. He said that they were meant to be humorous, but he could understand that they could be interpreted as hurtful. What, saying that Rachel Maddow is a dead ringer for Justin Bieber? I'm sure Rachel looked at the, you know, saw that and just laughed. I mean, you know, come on. Or maybe not. I have no idea what Rachel thought. And also, a little bit more here on Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was invited to give the 2012 commencement address at Liberty University. Liberty University. Now, that's the one that was founded, right, by Jerry Falwell. Isn't he Liberty University? Well, students there, their heads are exploding like so many rotten watermelons. They're going nuts. They're accusing the school of violating its own teachings by asking a Mormon to deliver the 2012 commencement address. That's what, they're freaking out. More than 700 comments by last Friday had been posted on the school's Facebook page about the announcement the day before that the school had invited Mitt Romney to give the commencement address. Most of the comments were decidedly against Chancellor Jerry Falwell Jr.'s invitation. You didn't know that Falwell had a kid? Oh, yeah. Citing that the school had taught them that Mormonism isn't part of the Christian faith. Really? One student wrote, quote, "I can't support Romney, and I'm happy I decided not to walk in the commencement this year. Liberty University should have gotten a Christian to speak, not someone who practices a cult. Shame on you, Liberty University." Another freshman, a woman named Janet Leffler, who's 53-year-old freshman at Liberty, expressed her anger on the Facebook page of the university, and then when contacted by CNN, she also sent a copy of the page of the freshman textbook, The Popular Encyclopedia of Apologetics, which included this passage, quote, "Mormon doctrine stands in stark contrast to Jewish and Christian monotheism, which teaches that there is only one true God and that every other God is a false God," end quote. Now, this woman's daughter, who's 33 and she's also a freshman, said, "I'm glad I'm not graduating this year. I would not want to end my studies at a Christian university by being sent into the world at commencement by a Mormon." You're 33, honey. What do you mean being sent into the world? What the hell have you been doing? Oh, that's right. Mom is a freshman. Oh, okay. No, nothing against that. I think it's great. Go ahead. But you're not getting an education at Liberty. You're being indoctrinated. Don't you? Well, never mind. You want to be indoctrinated. "We came to Liberty," she said, "because of our faith in Jesus, not for political reasons." But you're the one making it political. See, this is a part that just slays me. Just because a Mormon or a Jew or a Hindu or an atheist or whatever speaks at a commencement, does that all of a sudden shatter and smash the carefully constructed yet oh so delicate Christian faith? That these poor, helpless students have been inculcated with all their lives, all of a sudden it comes crashing down. They can't listen to... Oh, never mind. Oh, my God. Boo, 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 boo. So Romney is, I don't know, Liberty University will... Maybe they'll disinvite him, or maybe Romney will just show up anyway, and the students will hurl balloons filled with urine at him. You know, who knows? Something like that will probably happen because, you know, when you're a Christian... college student, and you are forced to endure the horrors of listening to a Mormon. Well, anything's possible. Yeah, it is really funny. It's always funny until they start heating up the ovens. You know what I'm saying? I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Truth Seekers, Mike.